Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing getting paid to vaccinate, generous return policies, and the best jobs that pay over $100,000.
That's right, Joel. This is our Friday Flight episode. And before we get to our sampling of news stories that we came across this week that we thought were interesting, I wanted to talk about coffee. So
you do like coffee.
I do.
I also like coffee.
Dude, who doesn't like coffee? You know, it's just like one of those things. It's like, do you like air? It's like, yeah, of course I do. So this past Wednesday, we talked about some of the big money moves that we can make in our lives that a lot of people are probably overlooking, right? We kind of discounted a lot of those smaller money moves that you can make, like skipping out on the, you know, the avocado toast. We kind of pointed at takeout coffee as well. And the thing is,
by the way, I saw a brilliant tweet, something like how Elon Musk got so rich. He didn't drink those 44 billion lattes or something like that. So it's just kind of discounting the idea that you actually get rich by.
It's like, oh yeah, that's exactly how he got rich.
He skipped 44 billion lattes and now look how much money he has.
But well, I mean, of course you can save a little bit of money, right? Like you can save some money here or there, but if you want to make a big impact in your life, like you got to do something else. You got to look at some of the big ticket items. And so this is another argument in favor of spending money on the coffee, right?
Okay.
And so for years now, we've been drinking the Aldi coffee. It's been perfectly fine for us. But for whatever reason, lately, Kate and I have just kind of been like, you know, this doesn't really taste all that great.
I want something more out of life.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just the kind we're getting or if it was inconsistent or what. And so the next time that Kate was at the International Farmers Market here in Atlanta, she picked up a pound of an Ethiopian blend. And we've been enjoying that recently. And dang, it's really good. We're really enjoying it. But then again, I also wonder, is it in my head? Because up until now, we've really enjoyed the Aldi coffee, right? I mean, we've got the burr grinder. We've got our technique down. We, you know, measure the water and the temperature. And we do all that kind of stuff.
Like a chemist when you make your coffee.
We're kind of coffee snobs, but we do it with cheap coffee. But now that I'm spending twice as much on coffee now, it should have double the flavor, right? And like, I get the real sort of moral of the story here that I wanted to share is that, you know, if there's something that you value, spend money on it, right? If there's something like coffee that you're going to touch every day, like maybe you're really into your coffee, your morning coffee ritual that you do every single day, right? If it's something that you value, don't sweat the small stuff. You know, instead focus on those larger things like we talked about on Wednesday's episode. In particular, when these are smaller expenses that have like an outsized impact on how we view life. We get a lot of value from these things in relation to the amount of money that we could spend on them. And so for a lot of people that, you know, that might be coffee, but I guess I want to encourage folks to think through what it is in their life that they really, you know, find a lot of pleasure in, that gives them a lot of joy, and make sure that those aren't things that you're cutting from your life to where it feels like you're just not having any more fun.
Right. Yeah. And I think you're right. There's like a huge difference between you going from, you know, $5 pound coffee at Aldi to $10 pound coffee. That's one small leap. But yeah, a big leap is getting coffee out every single day, right?
Exactly.
And so, yeah, I think especially if there are things that you can do at your house, whether, like, I don't know, for my wife, getting a little bit nicer shampoo is really important to her. And really, what does that actually cost us? I mean, the bottle maybe costs, I don't know, $12, $14 versus
instead of like
the 99 cents
or something
that I'm using.
So it's like $10 more, what, maybe a month or every 2 months?
It's probably every 2 months, something like that. Yeah. And so when you think about it like that, it's pretty minuscule, but it makes a big difference in her life. And so I think just like your coffee thing, if there are small ways that you can turn up the dial on things that you touch every day, that are going to make a big difference in how you feel about being able to cut back on some of the big items. I think sometimes being able to upgrade on the little stuff can give you the gusto to be able to continue to hack at the big stuff.
Yeah, it makes it feel like that we live in a luxurious household. We've got nice coffee. We've got the $12 shampoo, not the 99 cent stuff.
You exactly.
It's those small tweaks. I feel like it can affect us throughout the day, even, you know, like if you're waking up and you're really mad at the fact that you're drinking the coffee that's only $3 a pound, I feel like it shouldn't influence how you view the rest of your day. But if it is, you know, maybe it's worth spending an extra 10, maybe $15 for the entire month in order to have something that you're really excited to brew every single morning. You know, for me, maybe it's coffee. I don't know. I might end up going back to the Aldi stuff. For Emily, your wife, it's the shampoo. What is it for you? What's your little thing? This isn't what your craft beer equivalent, because we spend decent money on craft beer, but what do you feel like is your small thing that has an outsized impact on how it is that you maybe view the world?
Okay, I'll tell you what I want it to be, but it's not right now.
Okay.
Partly because of COVID. We've had like the best breakfast spot in the world, you know, in the neighborhood where we live.
I know exactly what you're about to say.
It's my goal to eat there at least once a week. I want that to be kind of like I want to be like a normal.
You want to be a regular?
Yeah, I want it to be my Cheers. And that's something I'm looking forward to doing, like to making that like a regular thing, whether it's with my wife or my kids or just with a friend.
A little
having
solo
coffee.
Trip even, maybe. If you roll in there with a newspaper, you know, like sit down. I feel like that's pretty classic.
I can do that too.
Kind of old school.
Yeah, but that's like the thing that I want to be kind of my regular thing. Like how expensive is it really to add in a $10, $12 breakfast, you know, once a week? Well, I can tell you how expensive that is. It's between $40 and $48 a month in your budget. But for me, that would move the needle in a big way. And that was actually my goal last year. That was one of my I don't really make goals or resolutions, but that was like one of two. And that just kind of fell apart because of COVID. And I'm hoping that in 2021, as the vaccine rollouts continue, that I will be able to make that a regular thing. That's going to move the needle for me.
I love it, man. Yeah. And if folks are wondering, it's homegrown here in Atlanta. It's a nice little breakfast spot. I wonder if they have if they sell gift cards.
Oh, maybe they do.
Because if so, that would be a great way to support them now. Maybe it's a small way to help them to stay afloat until you can get in there. You're gonna have to go in like twice a week though to make up for it once they open back up.
Hey, you don't have to twist my arm. But all right, let's get on to the Friday Flight, Matt. Stories we found interesting this week. By the way, speaking of a COVID vaccine, people getting paid to get vaccinated against COVID, is that a thing now? Well, kind of, actually it is. And there have been talks about the government incentivizing people to get shots and pay them money to do so, or even private companies. Are they going to pay workers to go get a vaccine in order to get the population of our country vaccinated more quickly? Well, the first signs of people being paid to get vaccinated are out there now. It turns out, Matt, the first company that at least I've seen doing this, Dollar General.
Nice.
Workers at Dollar General are going to be paid for 4 hours worth of work just to go and get vaccinated. So I think that's kind of cool. It's a move in the right direction in efforts to get a high level of people in our country vaccinated quickly.
Yeah, and it's actually good that they are paying for 4 hours worth of work, because actually a neighbor posted recently that they went and got their first vaccine shot at the Benz, our big stadium here in Atlanta, and she said it did take about 4 hours.
Ooh, all right.
She was out the door at 1:30. It wasn't until after 5 that she got back, but hopefully those things ramp up soon. But I do think this is a good tactic, though, to pay individuals. You know, a little extra cash in your pocket could be, the perfect motivation to make things happen. And it makes sense, too, from a business standpoint. Like, if you are Dollar General, this makes a ton of sense, because having more vaccinated workers means higher levels of safety and productivity for everyone. You don't have folks out sick. You have stuff happening. Your store is open. And this is good, too, obviously, for the general public who shops in those stores. I think this is a great carrot to dangle in front of the employees were you to own your own business.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's talk another story we saw this week. The price of cell phone plans has dropped precipitously over the last decade. It turns out the average cost of monthly service on a cell phone plan has dropped by an average of 26%, according to the Tax Foundation. Yet still, the average cell phone bill is over $100 a month,
dude,
which was stunning to me. Like,
I can't believe that.
I think I would have said $70 or $80 a month, but over $100 a month per person for a cell phone bill every month. And that's partly, too, the Tax Foundation found, because taxes have skyrocketed on many cell phone plans in the same time period, which has muted some of the savings that people were starting to see. It turns out that taxes, fees, and surcharges make up over 22% of the average bill, which is kind of crazy.
That's a big old cut, man. So what should folks do about it? You could stick with your current, you know, cell phone company and hope that they gradually lower your bill, you know, in the coming years, which they might do as the space has gotten more competitive. Some of the big names, they've had to respond and they've had to lower their prices to compete, man. But the best thing to do is to actively shop for a new wireless provider that offers lower rates and very similar service. We talk about MVNOs, which are mobile virtual network operators. We talk about them a good bit, so, you know, we're not going to hang out on this point for too long, but you can check out an article that Joel wrote over at howtomoney.com about the best low-cost wireless providers. That can definitely be a way that you can save money every month.
Yeah, don't be a statistic. Don't be the person spending way too much on cell phone service.
$100, man. That's terrible.
$100, man. A lot of our listeners are doing the monthly cell phone thing for 15 to 20, max like $30 a month. And so I see it in our Facebook group all the time, people chatting about saving big money on their cell phone bill. You and I have been doing that for a long time, too. So
I still think back to several years ago when we had like 10 people on our friends and family plan. And for that first year, man, what we got our plan down to like $6.50 per person.
Was it that low?
It was I'm pretty sure, man, it was really low. I think we jumped on some sort of promotion that they had going on. We had maxed out all of our spots, so the price was super low. And you were working some sort of employee discount as well.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, all those things combined, there was nobody else in the entire country paying as little as we were for cell phone service. And back then, I'm sure the average plan was like $120.
Yeah.
And I know we were paying under $10 per line, which was amazing.
We had a deal back then.
It was a lot of work.
Limited time only. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was pretty sweet while it lasted.
I'm happy with $15 a month.
Yeah, me too.
Right now. With no work.
I'll take it. Yeah. All right, let's get to some more stories. Some of the bigger retailers now are handling returns a bit differently these days. The Wall Street Journal published an article detailing how Walmart and Amazon are letting you keep certain items that you're trying to return and giving you money back at the same time. This is typically not the case for everything you order, but for cheaper items specifically that are kind of cost prohibitive to ship back to the retailer. I can provide some anecdotal evidence here, Matt, because over the holidays, we had this happen with an Amazon return that we attempted. We had ordered some like star neon Christmas light.
Nice.
It was like $13 or something like that. We attempted to return it and they gave us our money back and they were like, but keep the item anyway. And so I think we ended up giving that to my mother-in-law, to Emily's mom. It looked great in her RV.
I think I read that it costs like around $10 on average to process a return. And so I guess if you're close to that, they're just like, it's not even worth it. Just hang on to it.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen it up in the RV, though. I'm sure it was cute.
It looked good.
But yeah, I mean, returns, they're going to remain, I think, a major problem for online retailers, costing them a lot of money. You know, given the story we just covered, that's pretty obvious. Giving away products for free, like, that's not going to be a great recipe for business success. And on top of that, man, roughly 30% of items ordered online are returned. And so online retailers have their work cut out for them to bring those numbers lower. In addition to that, too, another compounding effect is that 60% of customers are what's called bracketing.
Oh, do tell. What is that?
So it's a photography term. And so typically, when you take pictures, it takes like three shots and they're at different exposures. And so you have one that's slightly underexposed, you have one at exposure, and then you take one slightly over exposure. Back in the film days, it was a way to make sure that you nailed the shot regardless of your settings.
Uh-huh.
Like sports photographers and wildlife photographers would bracket. But now you can apply it to shopping. And so that's where customers will intentionally buy multiple items in different sizes and colors, try them on, and then return the rest. You know, it makes sense that this is happening more because going into a store to try things on, that's certainly become less appealing, and folks have gotten used to the ease of ordering from home.
Yeah, and great for the customer, right? It feels nice, but at the same time, really awful for the retailer who's having to process tons of returns and that gets pretty costly for them.
Yeah, it's bad in multiple ways, though, honestly.
Yeah, because some retailers are suggesting that you donate items that didn't work for you that they don't want back, right? The items that they're telling you to keep, they're just asking you to donate it somewhere. And if you attempt a return and are told to keep it, Matt and I, we would suggest don't trash it. Donate it or your local Buy Nothing group, maybe somebody there is going to be interested in that. That could be the perfect place to toss it up for grabs. Also, too, it's just important to note, be careful what you order, because doing this thing, bracketing, and now I know exactly why it's called that. Thank you, Matt, for the explanation. But it contributes to landfill waste in a big way. And it can be nice from a consumer perspective, but it's not great for the environment. And so in particular, actually one thing you can do if you do like to order multiple things, try them on at home, and then make the return, is if you can drop it off back in an actual physical retail location, that is going to cut down on the costs of the return for the retailer. And so that's one way at least to kind of maybe make something that's kind of bad, not as bad.
Yeah, let's talk about cars. It turns out this weekend is the time to buy used cars. And this is according to data from iccars.com.
You going car shopping this weekend?
I am not. We're going to keep our van until we drive it into the ground.
Okay,
man.
All right.
Literally, I don't think, the next vehicle we own will maybe be an electric vehicle, but it's also going to have to, drive like 1,000 miles in order to...
The rate you're going, you might get something that's got like wings and stuff and starts flying off into the sky.
We'll see. So MLK Jr. Day weekend. This is the time when used car prices are at their best. And that's partly because more trade-in vehicles hit the market at the end of the year and finally make their way into the for sale market right about now. And also, you're more likely to pay a lower price when buying a car during the week as opposed to on a Saturday or Sunday. So literally on Monday, that should be when you can score the absolute best deal. It's not a massive difference, but it does make sense. Car lots are busier on the weekends, and so there's less of a need to be flexible on price. So if you were planning to maybe purchase a used vehicle article this weekend. Look to Monday for the best deal.
Yeah, that's the best thing I've heard about Mondays in quite a while, Matt. So thanks for that. by the way, too, on the car note, CarMax actually just announced that they've extended the length of their money-back guarantee that they offer when you buy a used car. CarMax sells more used cars nationwide than any other retailer, by the way. But now, when you buy something via CarMax, you have 30 full days to decide whether or not you like the car that you've purchased. You can put up to 1,500 miles on that bad boy and still take it back for a full refund.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can take your Camry off-roading and like and do a bunch of stuff and then take it back and be like, not for me.
I don't know about off-roading, but just drive it somewhere for a really long time is what you can do.
Yes, you can do that. And for literally a month, which is pretty cool. That obviously gives them a leg up on Carvana, who has a 7-day no questions asked return policy, which is still solid, but it's not nearly as compelling now as the CarMax money back guarantee. So that's cool too, that you know, when you're deciding where you want to buy from, CarMax and Carvana are two good choices if you're, in particular, if you're avoiding buying directly from an individual, which is typically where you get the best deal. But now with CarMax, you have a long time to kind of get used to that car and get it checked out by a mechanic and see whether you actually like it or not before deciding that you're all in and you're going to keep it.
Yeah, years ago, man, the 400-mile window that Carvana had, I thought that was great, but 1,500 miles is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
I looked it up on Google Maps. That means you could drive from Atlanta to Chicago and back and still have miles on the odometer to potentially make a return if you were that kind of person.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's why they're doing it, because they know that people probably aren't actually going to do that. That would probably put you in the category of being cheap.
Yes, I think it would.
but it's still pretty amazing that you would have that peace of mind were you to buy a car from CarMax. I think that's pretty great. All right, man, we've got a few more stories that we're going to get to, including the number one job that pays over $100,000. We'll get to that story plus a few others right after this break.
All right, let's keep going. It's Friday Flight Day, and there are a lot of financial stories to cover, and many of them pertain to your wallet and how you should proceed with your own personal finances. And Matt, there's not many of more importance than this to some of our listeners out there. Last week, you and I, we talked about the unfortunate situation that many people who filed with one of the major tax prep services found themselves in. They weren't able to receive their stimulus funds.
No money.
Yeah, they were supposed to get those, but they couldn't due to a glitch. But fortunately, TurboTax, H&R Block, and Jackson Hewitt are all working directly with the IRS in order to fix this for customers and get that money into their accounts. TurboTax actually says that it's been able to deposit millions of stimulus payments into customer accounts since last Friday. So if you are one of the people who did file with one of the big tax prep companies and you're owed stimulus money, but you haven't received it yet, we'll put some links in the show notes that should help you know where to turn, how to figure out where your stimulus money is at. But that is good news for a lot of people who thought they might have to wait until they file their taxes and got a return. Some of these people won't have to, and they'll actually get their money more quickly.
All right, let's move on to some career news, Joel. According to U.S. News and World Report, they have their list of the best jobs that pay over $100,000. And it turns out, man, that being a little drum roll, you know, being a physician's assistant ranks number one. For the last 3 years, software developers have been in the top spot, but most of the top-ranking jobs this year are all in the medical field. So nurse practitioners, physicians, and medical and health service managers made the top five as well. And the study took into account, you know, where the jobs will be in the coming decade, which is super helpful if you are thinking about the work that you want to pursue in the coming years. And there's other benefits too, man, I think, when it comes to being a PA, right? Like, there's the obvious financial side of it. Like, you're not going to have to go hundreds of thousands of dollars into debt, you know, to become a doctor. Obviously, there's less time involved in becoming a PA over an MD. But being a PA, you've got more control of your schedule. You know, like, you have the opportunity to like have an actual life. a lot of the doctors I meet, like, it's crazy demanding to be a doctor. We have a couple friends who are PAs, and they love their work, and they're just able to, like, they still have that connection to the patients, to people, right? And like, that's why they like doing that type of work. They're able to actually help people, and you can still do that when you're a PA. Like, that's like half half the time when you go into the doctor, a lot of the routine stuff is not being taken care of by a doctor. It's being taken care of by the PA there that's on hand, or a nurse. And so I think these are all great reasons to consider being a PA instead of an MD.
All right. I feel like you're pushing me in that direction. Maybe I should go podcaster to PA. What do you think?
I think you'd crush.
All right. Thanks, man. obviously, yeah, those things don't happen overnight, though, right? You don't get to be a PA or a doctor without a whole lot of work and, yes, some medical debt as well. These jobs require years of education, getting advanced degrees. But I feel like, Matt, these lists can be helpful if your interests and the opportunity to earn significantly more overlap. It can't just be going after it for the money. It has to be something you're already interested in or good at, I think, too. But also, too, it's important to remember that earning more doesn't always require an advanced degree. I'm just thinking back to our conversation with Ken Rusk, Matt, about blue-collar work. And it was so enlightening and helpful for anyone who's interested in working with their hands, but at the same time, upping their income. And I think that is something that is even more readily available to millions and millillions of people out there. That was episode 277, by the way. We'll link to that in the show notes. But yeah, pivoting to earn more doesn't always have to include going back to school.
That's right. Okay, if somehow you haven't noticed, home prices have been skyrocketing over the past decade.
I was living in a hole for the past 10 years, so I didn't notice.
I think even if you were living in the hole, you would have seen the value of that hole go up in value. But this has made housing affordability, dude, a real issue in our country. And so while there are many things that can and probably should be done to make housing more affordable for folks, one of the ways to drive prices down is to create more housing density. An influx of available units means lower prices, but sometimes density can completely change the look and the feel of a neighborhood, and that can be hard for the residents who currently live there. There's going to be a lot of not in my backyard going on, right? But that's what makes ADUs so great. Basically, the argument for ADUs is, yes, please, in my backyard. And the Washington Post reports that they're becoming legal in more cities all across the country. And of course, ADUs stand for accessory dwelling units. But yeah, there's been a lot of talk about these out west as well. I think it was last year that Los Angeles passed a law that allowed for ADUs in and around the LA area. And it's even something that you considered recently, dude.
Yeah, something I still want to do at some point in time. Just haven't done it yet.
Not right now.
No, but we have been talking about ADUs on the show for a while now. They're basically tiny homes in your backyard. You might have heard them called granny flats, garage apartments, or carriage houses. There's a bunch of different names, but now the predominant term, the legal term, I guess, is ADUs. And the legalization of ADUs, which allows many people to essentially build that tiny home in their backyard and rent it out, is starting to create that density without changing the face of the neighborhood that it gets built in, without making too drastic of a change, right? And companies are springing up that specialize in building these backyard homes too, which is cool to see, like little entrepreneurs who specialize specifically in ADUs. By the way, for our listeners out there who own a home, it can also generate some real income. So check and see if ADUs are legal where you live. And if you can build one, I think it makes sense, Matt, for a lot of people to run the numbers. It just really could be the perfect way to dip your toes into rental real estate for the first time. It's a little less expensive, a little less daunting. Also, you feel like you can keep an eye on your property because it's literally in your backyard. So if it's possible where you live, I think it makes sense for a whole lot of people to consider it.
Yeah, I mean, and again, this past Wednesday, we talked about some of these bigger money moves that you can make. Dude, being able to offset your housing costs would be a huge win when it came to a lot of people's personal finances.
Yeah, I think I saw one of the stats in that article said that the average monthly costs of building an ADU is essentially, you know, $1,000 a month, and the average monthly rent that people are getting from that ADU is between $1,400 and $1,500. So,
boom.
Yeah, you're talking about a significant increase to your bottom line every month if you build one and you are able to manage it well.
I love it, man. Speaking of housing, one of the provisions of the relief bill that passed a couple weeks ago was $25 billion that has been designated for a rental assistance program. Up to 15 months of your rent could be provided for if you can show that you've been financially impacted by COVID, if you can show a risk of housing instability, so for example, a past due rent notice, and then your household income also needs to be at or below 80% of your area's median income. And so if this sounds like you may be eligible for some rent assistance. You can check out a database compiled by the National Low Income Housing Coalition to see if there are already programs in your state or your area. And regardless, too, you can check with your state's housing department to see how it is that you can apply. Again, if this sounds like you, you may be eligible. And so we'll make sure to include those links in our show notes.
Yeah, that's meaningful monetary support for people who are struggling to pay the rent right now. And again, go to our website. We'll have the links to the National Low Income Housing Coalition and the specific programs that you're going to need to turn to in order to tap into those funds that were made available in that latest relief bill. All right. And also, too, a part of the new relief bill were more PPP funds or Paycheck Protection Program funds. And something interesting, Matt, about the new version of PPP is that funds are being specifically targeted towards independent restaurants, music venues, and nonprofits too. Basically, a lot of the small businesses that were severely impacted. And it's just so great to see specific relief being applied where the hurt is being felt the most right now. I know I've missed live music. I can't wait to go back to see my first show in one of our local music venues, you know? And I'm just glad that there's specific money being made available for them, because they're hurting more than almost any other business out there right now, right? And also, too, if you're in a solid financial position, look to how you can play your role in support of these businesses where you live as well. Matt, you have just challenged me to go get a homegrown gift card until I can go back on a weekly basis. I'm going to do that because that is one of my favorite businesses, and it would be a crying shame if it wasn't there all of us to enjoy in the future, you know?
It'd be a huge bummer for sure. Yeah, so make sure that you're considering the businesses around you in your neighborhood, in your town. They may be eligible for some of this money, but let's make sure that we are doing our part as well. Let's make sure we get to the end of this year all in a great, strong financial position. Well, Joel, that's going to be it for this episode, buddy. Listeners can find our show notes up on our website. We'll have some of the resources that we mentioned throughout this episode, and we'll also have links to some of the different stories if you want to read those in depth that we covered today.
Yeah, we hope you have a great weekend. Hope to see you back here on Monday. Matt, we've got an awesome interview lined up with Lisa Rowan. It's all about practical money hacks, and there's like a bunch that we run through from her new book, and I guarantee you there's a bunch that you can implement immediately in order to save more money. So that's coming up on Monday. All right, that's going to do it for this episode, though. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.